This July 4th, America marked the 250th anniversary of adopting its Declaration of Independence in 1776. The country was engaged in the Revolutionary War, which didn't end until 1783. The United States was only at peace for 1 year before engaging in the Northwest Indian War. Our nation has been at war or in armed conflict for 230 of its 250 years, or roughly 92% of its existence. Did that surprise anyone to hear? It did me. Why so much? Reasons we go to war have been given, such as national defense, defense of allies, regional security, or economic interest. The just war theory has included a wide range of definitions over time, most commonly if necessary to repel an invasion or for defense or in order to restore justice. Many consider World War II as the last just war. Some say the traditional just war theory is outdated, often misused to justify unnecessary conflicts. Others argue violence is never justified. So what do we, as Unitarian Universalists guided by love, do? How do we respond in times of war? In their letter to the President and Congress this April, our Unitarian Universalist Association leaders wrote, "As a matter of faith, UUs believe we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology." You may have seen the statement of concern from our racial and cultural justice team in News and Notes drafted shortly after the U.S. and Israel initiated war on Iran. It said in part, "We mourn the loss of life, destruction of infrastructure, demonization of others, and enduring conflict. We strive to be committed to the pursuit of peace and justice." Reverend Nika supported our request that Chalice not be silent now. She agreed to link to the UUA April letter on our website, and she invited us to reach out to you. In addition to asking for your thoughts about the statement of concern in News and Notes, we reach out to you again today. We're sharing some of our thoughts, and we hope for conversation as a community.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am Jill Lewis, one of the justice leaders at Chalice. Today, I want to share with you my memories of the Vietnam War. I grew up in the hailstorm called the Vietnam War. My earliest memories are not of battles, but of flag-draped coffins carrying boys who might have once walked the same halls as I did at school. Seniors in high school 1 year, gone the next. Whole neighborhoods thinned out as the draft swept them away and replaced their school books with rifles. The draft called boys 18 to 26 to serve in military. Some ran to Canada, others clung to college deferments. A few went willingly, believing in duty. Others took rebellious action, publicly burning their draft cards. Truly, there was no hiding from it. The war impacted everyone. And even then, especially then, we saw a country lacking equity. The privileged used their social and political ties to avoid the draft, and the rest marched on. The My Lai massacre shattered whatever innocence we still had. An entire village, children, parents, grandparents pushed into rice paddies and executed. The soldier responsible was first hailed as a hero and later incarcerated. That contradiction carried the moral confusion of the era. War didn't just kill people, it twisted them. Many soldiers became detached, a kind of separation from the world the rest of us lived in. Some slipped into madness, as was reflected in the film Apocalypse Now, with Colonel Kurtz acting as a god and chopping people up at will. My own family was not spared. I have two cousins that are brothers. One flew over Vietnam as an Air Force bombardier, dropping explosions on land he had never seen, to people he had never seen. The other traveled to India and became a Buddhist priest, devoting his time to peace. The war made them enemies. Understanding and time healed them as brothers again. My first real encounter with PTSD came later in an apartment I rented in the San Fernando Valley. The building manager lived only a few doors down. Every night, he screamed in his sleep, raw fits of anger that I heard clearly through the thin walls. I didn't know the term then, but I quickly learned the wounds of war were not always visible. Among ourselves, the anti-war communities, we knew an interdependence, a bond I have not felt that strongly since. We had demonstrations and protests, singing and shouting for peace. I remember standing and holding hands with others at the West LA Veterans Building, forming a human circle of protest and prayer for peace. Jerry Rubin was in the crowd that day. I heard them say, "We sang peace songs and held a long meditative silence. For a brief time, it felt like we were really going to change the world." Down at Venice Beach, I remember seeing veterans, haggard men, carving sculptures into sand and asking for donations, lost in a world they no longer understood. Vets came home to lost friends, split families, displaced homes, in a country that didn't know how to welcome them. Many arrived in wheelchairs, and their presence forced cities to confront accessibility for the first time. The ramps, the widened doorways, they were built because so many young men came home broken. And then there was the music. Anger, satire, various levels of wit, all expressing our shared contempt. I remember "Ohio" by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, a song that captured the rage and grief of a generation watching its own government turn on itself. At Kent State, four dead in Ohio. The Vietnam War clatters back at us like a roving helicopter, dropping images of pain and loss. It reminds us that no battle trumps the life and soul of our shared humanity.
Hello. My name is Clint. My pronouns are he and him, and I am a co-founder of the Chalice Climate Action Team. When I was around 15 years old, I read the book Johnny Got His Gun by Dalton Trumbo. The book is about John Bonham, a young American soldier serving in World War I, who awakens in a hospital bed after being caught in the blast of an exploding artillery shell. He gradually realizes that he has lost his arms, legs, and all of his face, but that his mind functioned perfectly, leaving him a prisoner in his own body. Needless to say, it's a terrifying story and one that imprinted the horrors of war on my mind at a young age. In 1990, 2 years after having read the book, the first Gulf War began. Every night I listened to a radio show that detailed the war happening in the Middle East. The host frequently speculated that there could be a reinstatement of the draft. This absolutely terrified me, as I had no desire to kill or to be killed. Over time, I learned that the seeds of this war had been planted by British colonialism and now centered around the control of vast oil fields. People were literally dying for oil. I went to my first anti-war protest with some friends from school here in Thousand Oaks and was horrified to find another group of kids actually supporting the war, cheering it on. How can anyone actually want the death and destruction that comes from war? In addition to the deaths of over 100,000 people, the Gulf's war environmental impact was horrific and included over 600 oil well fires and the largest oil spill in history until that point. The second Gulf War was even more destructive. When we speak of the destructive nature of war, the climate impact is rarely mentioned. In conflict after conflict, the immediate crisis overshadows a quieter emergency unfolding. Yet scientists warn that the climate impacts of warfare are real, measurable, and largely neglected by global policy. The U.S. military purchases 270,000 barrels of oil a day and is the biggest institutional polluter on the face of the planet, creating more environmental harm than 140 countries combined. Last year, the U.S. spent close to $1 trillion on its military, which is more than the next six countries' spending combined. This money could be going to those in need, but instead it is being spent on what Martin Luther King Jr. Called the greatest plague that can inflict mankind, war. On Friday, June 17th, Chalice will be hosting a community forum, which you've heard about, with the Climate Action Team. We will be showing the movie Earth's Greatest Enemy, a documentary that will change how you see both the U.S. military and environmentalism. Cindy Peister of Veterans for Peace will be speaking and taking questions after the film. I urge you to attend. As Unitarian Universalists, we have shared values that bring us together. We acknowledge that every person is inherently worthy and has a right to flourish with dignity, love, and compassion. We work towards a diverse, multicultural, beloved community and honor the interdependent web of all existence. But how can we do this while tearing apart the fabric of communities around the world, destroying the ground beneath their feet and burning the skies above? I'd argue that we can't. So resist the war machine and the oil industry that fuels it in any way you can, but always let love guide your resistance. For love is a tapestry woven from empathy and compassion, and without love, we are at war with one another and ultimately ourselves. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Barbara Layton, and I use she, her pronouns. I'm very thankful for Chalice. People here have been a solid support, taking actions, volunteering, building community connections, and sharing our spiritual practices together. Last fall, inspired by our land acknowledgement and a visit to Satwiwa, I began a slow read of Benjamin Madley's An American Genocide, the United States and the California Indian Catastrophe, to deepen my understanding of our history. You may know that in the 80 years from first contact to statehood, California's Native American population dropped by half, mostly due to disease and severe oppression. After the U.S. took California in the Mexican-American War, drastic new policies decimated California Indians from about 150,000 people to just 30,000 survivors by 1873. Painful parallels from this book's history and our situation today compelled me to share the three examples that contrast to UU values. First, in 1849, men planning statehood included Californios, Anglos, one Indian descendant, and some foreign-born. A heavily debated decision passed by a single vote to deny voting rights to all Indians in California. Think of today's decisions about Citizens United, gerrymandering, voter suppression, and more approved by our current Supreme Court. Where would we be if pluralism that honors diversity and culture and in culture and experience had been valued rather than exclusion of some in favor of others? Second, the gold rush brought in a sudden influx of men who tended to value greed and racial entitlement. One was California's first governor, Peter Burnett, who declared, "A war of extermination will continue to be waged between the races until the Indian race becomes extinct." Think of today's invasions around the world that take over land and kill or subjugate inhabitants. Where would we be if our leaders could embrace the inherent worth and dignity of all people? And third, the new state supplied guns to paid militias to eliminate native settlements armed only with bows and arrows. Carnage accelerated after the state received federal reimbursement. Indian hunting militias became a job opportunity and a means of acquiring native land. This year, UUs for Social Justice reported that Congress has given $240 billion to federal immigration enforcement agencies. Since January 2025, over 1,120 people have been taken by ICE in Ventura County. Where would we be if our tax dollars were used to honor the interdependent web of existence instead of persecuting people who are part of our habitat? Changing disastrous power structures requires many movements of deliberate action. Sadly, apathy and silence aid the oppressors. There is real beauty in acting collectively in a love-based movement. We can work hard together and also take breaks for self-care. With intentional practice, we can create peace within. Recently, I resumed regular meditation to value the breath of life and steady myself to face difficult realities. Cultivating a generous spirit of gratitude and hope helps us personally and in community as we adapt to our changing world. Small groups like our Feeding Hands, Racial and Cultural Justice, UU the Vote, Climate Action Team, or Pride Squad help us support each other and make strides toward just and beloved communities. How will future generations be impacted by our actions today? Let's speak our UU values out loud in many different ways as we collaborate, care for the vulnerable, and help build a rising tide of people working for a better world. Writer Octavia Butler said, "There's no single answer that will solve all our future problems. There's no magic bullet. Instead, there are thousands of answers at least. You can be one of them if you choose to be." Thank you.
Thank you, Jill, Clint, and Barbara. Your words reflect our UU values and offer possible ways to be guided. Our UUA 2010 Statement of Conscience called Creating Peace further guides us. We believe all people share a moral responsibility to create peace and calls us to action at all levels of human interaction, creating peace in our world by advocating for policies that move our nation toward building a peaceful, just, and sustainable world, creating peace in our society by acting in the wider community to reduce the causes of institutional and structural violence, creating peace in our congregations through our worship, religious education, and social action, creating peace in our relationships by practicing compassionate communication and reverence for the interdependent web of all existence, and creating peace within ourselves by engaging in spiritual practices that cultivate inner peace, loving kindness, and compassion towards ourselves. Can we support each other in these actions? Can we work to create more peace for ourselves, our society, our world together?
Yes.
Gordon has put together a list of organizations working for peace. We can all check that out. It's linked to in the Love in Action Opportunities doc in News and Notes, or you can see Gordon afterwards for a hard copy. A representative from one of the organizations, Veterans for Peace, you heard from Clint, is going to be with us this Friday for the forum. We invite you, please, share your thoughts with each other, with us, on the ways that we can best live our shared values in these times of war, creating peace and visioning a world with more love. For in the words of Jimi Hendrix, when the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know peace. May it be so.